Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's guest on Better Than I Found It is first-year University of New Mexico coach Jake Harrington. When Jake took over at UNM in mid-August, he was filling some pretty big shoes, following Lobo golf legend Glenn Milliken. Jake's first year has been a great one so far, leading the Lobos to two victories and also three runner-up finishes. That's a great start to his career at Albuquerque, but not really a surprise. Jake had great success at Little Rock and South Mountain Community College in previous years. Jake's a great guy who really coaches to his players' hearts, and I know you'll enjoy this podcast. All right, Better Than I Found It listeners, join me in welcoming New Mexico head men's golf coach Jake Harrington to the podcast. Jake, it's really nice of you to join me today.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, I say this a lot to coaches because I've been wanting to get to your podcast, but there's so many interesting coaches and acquaintances and good and close friends of mine throughout college golf. It's like I want to get to every one of them eventually. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I noticed you and I were playing in the same tournament here at Arizona State's Thunderbird tournament at Papago Golf Club here in Tempe. I knew you would be here, so I thought, let's just sit down here after the practice round and knock this out. So thanks a lot for being here today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I know you got some history around here. You grew up around here. You played Papago growing up. So tell me a little bit about what that's like to come back to home.
I mean, it's really nostalgic to come here and to play at a Division I tournament, one of the tournaments that I've always looked forward to as a coach, to one day be able to coach in that event. You know, this was a course that my dad worked about 5-10 minutes from the golf course, and back in the day it was $19.
Oh my God.
To get a junior card, and he would drop me off with $5, and I'd go play with the Dew Sweepers in the morning, play 18 holes, and then the $5 was for a hot dog and a soda, and then I'd go play again in the afternoon, and then my dad would either hand me his pager to where he'd page me when he wanted me to come off the course, or he'd come out and join me for a couple holes. And that was a lot of my summers, you know, between Papago and Alta Mesa Country
Club. And you never wanted to come off the golf course.
No, never.
I remember playing at the Ponca City Country Club, and if it was a day where Dad didn't have me working and picking up range balls or something, I could get in 45 holes easy, some days three rounds, 54.
Yeah.
So I know that's got to be exciting for you to come back here as a head coach of a Division I team competing in this event. And that's really, really very cool. But, you know, Matt Thurman's assembled a great field here.
Absolutely.
Some tournaments are top heavy, and then they're not so good at the bottom. This goes deep into the field with ranked teams that are awesome. You better bring your A game this week. That's a fact.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no slouch in this field. Everybody's great.
Absolutely. Well, you know, first of all, bring me up to speed on your season. I know you're ranked 19th. I know you guys have won a couple of big events, the Tucker, your home event being one of them, which is great, and the NIT, Arizona's event there at Tucson National. But and you've had three runner-up finishes. So you've had a great first season there. Bring me up to speed on how it's gone.
Well, it's been really great, and I've been fortunate to have a bunch of guys that, you know, I got the job the first week of August. And the guys trusted in the process of hiring a new coach. They did it real quick, and they stayed there. I mean, you have guys like Bastian Amat, who arguably my number one. He's top 50 in the world, and a kid who has played in the U.S. Open this summer, played in the USAM this summer, played in the Barracuda and made the cut, and still decided to stay. In today's day and age of transferring and leaving and NIL, this and that,
totally understand.
You have a guy like that says, nope, I love New Mexico, I want to be here. And that's one of the things that really drew me to New Mexico when I took the job, was how many people went there, stayed there, and they love it so much they just want to be around it. And I knew there was something about that to me, that everybody I met had gone to school there, stayed in town, never left, and I wanted to explore that more. I'd always heard about how great the job was, but then fast forward into these guys that we have, I have a benefit of three great seniors at the top, and then, you know, Carson Heron as a junior, and it's really, I call it a four-headed monster, that those guys lead the way, and we're trying to figure out who that five guy is. We develop a lot of these young kids that are there, but these guys have been great. They've been open-minded to my philosophy. I'm different than Glenn. Glenn is an incredible coach.
Glenn Milliken.
Glenn Milliken. Mm-hmm. and I do things a little different, and these guys have embraced it. And, you know, I think that's part of why we've had such a successful season. And, you know, because these guys have had the benefit of four great coaches, mm-hmm. and Sean Carlin and Glenn Milliken, and then me and Sam Saunders. Mm-hmm. And they've been able to take pieces of all of us and use it to their advantage.
And Sam is an alum as well, right?
Yep, Sam was an alum, yeah. Graduated there in 2015, and, you know, played there with Victor Perez. And he's born and raised in Albuquerque. And, you know, part of when I got the job, trying to figure out who my assistant was, because Glenn Milliken took Sean Carlin with him to Mizzou,
yeah.
was I had a couple different options, and Glenn told me a lot about Sam, and I'm good friends with Glenn. And so when I started talking with Sam, he said, well, Jake, I've never coached before. I said, well, that's great, Sam. I've never been to Albuquerque before. I said, so how about this? You teach me about Albuquerque and what makes Albuquerque great, and I'll teach you about coaching. And that's kind of how him and I have developed, and we think a lot alike. And, you know, somebody who just came off tour for 8 years playing, you know, nationwide, some PGA stuff, and just battle tested and now getting into it, it's really helped the guys, you know, kind of have a different feel as well with me.
There's a big advantage, in my opinion, too, of an alum being the assistant or the head coach. Yeah. He can speak to a recruit with passion about the university and what it did for him. I've always believed that. When Alan Bratton was my assistant coach at Oklahoma State, I just loved the way he talked to, you know, I had my own style, but he had a way of talking to a recruit. Like, I came here as a pretty good player, and I walked out of here as the college player of the year. And he wasn't bragging on himself. It was like, this university helped me get there. So I'm sure Sam will be able to do something like that.
And as a head coach, it fires you up. Like, yep. I'm sure when Alan was there, he would tell you about it, and then you're getting more fired up about where you were, and I'm getting more fired up about New Mexico. Be like, okay, let's go get the best player in the world, because – you know, Sam says we got him, and this is how he was created and how Victor Perez was created. Let's make that here. Why not?
I think that's great. Well, you know, you've won twice, three runner-up finishes, ranked 19th. So you're having a great start to a year. Obviously, we have this event. And then you have the conference championship, the Mountain West Conference Championship up in Eugene. I've actually played that golf course before with my team years ago. Took them out there to Oregon for the NCAA championship. We went over there and played that course. So I think you're going to like that place.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Eugene is a special place, big trees and, you know, things that I love. And hopefully it doesn't rain the entire time we're there, but I'm looking forward to the Mountain West Championship.
They do get some rain out there.
They do, just a little.
Absolutely. Well, so I just want to say congratulations on a great start to a first year. And obviously you and I are going to go out and compete this week. That should be great.
Absolutely.
You know, as is my custom when I'm talking to coaches, and I get to talk to a lot of really great coaches, I really want to know where their start in the game was. I know where mine was. I was a son of a golf professional. You know, I grew up at the golf course, cut my teeth at a golf course. But what was like your background? I know you played right here in Tempe or Scottsdale area. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, I grew up the son of a golfer, and obviously those of you who know me or see me, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5", 6'6", but I came from a golf family. I played every sport growing up, baseball, basketball. Never played tackle football, which disappointed all the football coaches. But in Arizona, that was during golf season. And so my dad was one of the best players in the Southwest. That's kind of how he made his life with the sales industry and raising a family, and how he kept working up the business channels with Converse and those kind of things. He missed out by one shot 2 years in a row for the LA Open. Mm. Like, that's the caliber he was, and he always played all these elite amateur events, the Moon Valley, the MV3, and all the Kachina and everything out here in Arizona.
So he's obviously the most influential person.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, without a doubt. And that was me tagging along with my dad, who's my best friend. I just wanted to be around him, so I got to see the good, the bad, the ugly of golf. It's where I learned the etiquette of golf, mm-hmm. being around his buddies. It's where I learned the gambling side of golf. And, you know, he didn't shield me from it because he wanted me to see the good and the bad so he can teach me life lessons about it. And I just wanted to be by his side. I'd go watch him play nine holes on the weekend with the gross guys and their money games, and then I'd go practice. And that's where I learned about golf and got my passion for it. And there was times where I didn't want to be on the golf course. Here in Arizona, it gets 120. Sometimes you don't want to be out there, but I wanted to be around my dad. And so that's what I did. I was always around him. I was fortunate to have a bunch of great junior golfers at Alta Mesa Country Club growing up, between there and Papago, and then high school golf at Dobson Ranch with, you know, Ches Reavy as a high school teammate. So
Ches was your high school?
Yep, Ches. Well, I was a senior when Ches was a freshman. Okay. So I got to be around Ches a lot. We still talk to this day, and he's awesome. But that my dad is my biggest influence in why I played the game for so long and why I coach.
You mentioned your dad's buddies. At my dad's club, there weren't very many junior golfers. So most of my golf was either played with my brother or my sister, a young kid named Mark Powell that I played a lot of golf with, but most of the time I played with the members. Mm-hmm. And I think they teach you a lot about how to act, sometimes how not to act.
Yeah.
But I think it was an advantage playing with adults. I really do.
Oh, I agree. I mean, just the years of experience and the etiquette and where to stand and where to put your bag and always bring a towel up to the green and how to mark your ball. And when you did something wrong, they were going to let you have it, but you knew they were doing it out of love. And I think that is one of the things I carry with me into coaching is you let a player have it, but you can only do that if they know that you love them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's how you push them and get better. And I'm so thankful that they all took me under their wing, but they showed me how to play golf and how to be a great golfer and a human being.
Well, so you played competitive golf for a time. Mm-hmm. I know you played in college,
yeah.
But what would eventually take you down the coaching ranks? For me, it was I wasn't playing well enough to make too many checks.
Yeah.
So, and I did love working with young kids in the game, but and I coached high school golf initially. What was your first coaching experience? What drove you there?
Well, I initially played at South Mount Community College. Then I committed to the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. And the end of May, the coach at Charlotte called me up and said they had to give my scholarship to the women's team. So I didn't have a scholarship. So I ended up going to Holy Names University, mm-hmm. a private school in Northern California, because they could offer me a full ride. I'm one of six kids, so mm-hmm. my family mm-hmm. needed it. So I went up to the Bay Area, had a great time up there. The first couple months was a struggle, me feeling sorry for myself that I wasn't a D1 golfer. I was an NAIA golfer, but ended up having the time of my life for 2 years. When I was getting ready to leave Holy Names, I had five guys that were going to sponsor me to play professionally. And when I graduated and it was time to put the money up, the five guys disappeared. So I had nowhere to go.
Money disappeared. Where are
we? Money disappeared, and there my dream went with them. And so I knew that if I wasn't going to play professionally, I wanted a master's degree to fall back on. And so I applied at Arizona State University and the University of Phoenix, because I knew if I worked there, I'd get my master's degree paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And so University of Phoenix calls me up right after I finished qualifying. I'd won the state qualifier in Tucson, and I got back in my car, drove back, got a call from the University of Phoenix, says, Jake, we want you to start. I think it was 2 weeks from then. Happened to be the start of the state amateur. I said, was there any way I can start a week later? They said, no, it's either here, you don't have the job. And that was the end of my amateur career. And went and worked at the University of Phoenix as a financial advisor and got my master's degree. And at the end of that, I had done 7 months of interviews with the CIA to be an undercover agent. I had interviewed with the Border Patrol, with FBI. My dream was to be in the FBI.
I knew nothing about this, right. About you.
And so that was what I wanted to do and where my focus was, and that was my passion. And during that time, I left University of Phoenix and worked for a company called Fastenal, which was an industrial supply company. And my goal was to move to Puerto Rico to take over the branch there, because I speak Spanish a little bit, and I used to be fluent in Spanish. And my goal was to go to Puerto Rico because my master's degree was international business and take over those. Well, my old coach from South Mount Community College, T.L. Brown, calls me up. And he goes, Jake, I've accepted the job at Chico State. I'm leaving South Mountain. You ever think about coaching? I said, no, coach, I haven't.
T.L. is a legend, by the way.
Yeah, T.L. is a legend.
Yeah, he's great.
And I said, no, coach, I've never thought about it. He goes, well, think about it because I think you'd be pretty good at it. And I said, well, I appreciate it, coach. And I hung up the phone. I called my dad, and my dad says, what the hell are you thinking? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, Jake, why are you trying to get in CIA, the FBI, Border Patrol, that? I said, well, because I want to make a difference. He goes, exactly. He goes, Jake, 17 to 22-year-olds is the biggest difference you'll make in anybody's life. That's when those boys become men. And if you can have that direction and that focus and teach them about all the things you've been through in life, give them that. He goes, that's the biggest difference you can make in somebody's life. And I said, you know what, Dad, you're right. Well, I had sent my younger brother to play for TL. So I called my younger brother up. He's 8 years younger than me. I said, Daniel, here's the deal. They want me to throw my name in the hat, but it's your team. I said, so if you want me to come, I'll come. If you don't, I won't. I said, it's no big deal, but this is your team. And he thought about it. He says, no, Jake, I love it. And so went to play, went, threw my name in the hat, and they said, okay, we want to hire you as the interim coach. You've never coached before. I said, no, you can hire me as the head coach. You can fire me in a year if you want, if I don't do what you think, but I can't recruit if you hire me as an interim coach. And they said, okay, deal.
That's good thinking right there on your part.
Right.
Maybe so, took a chance.
But, took a chance, yeah. But so they hired me. I benched my brother the entire year because I was so scared to play favorites. My brother was one of the best golfers around, but he was that guy that you and I both know that can find a way in qualifying to fall back on the last couple mm-hmm. holes. But in a tournament, he was an absolute gamer. And I benched him the entire year. And that was the biggest mistake I made, but that was my biggest learning experience as well. Because to this day, I always have one coach's pick. Because you always know as a coach, because you're around them so much, you see so much of them, you know who you need to take a chance on and who you don't. And if I would have given him that one chance, he probably would have never come out of the lineup. Sent my brother to play. My brother was an All-American the next 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And so he was a great player, but that was my being Bautista, because I didn't want his teammates to think, oh, here's his big brother here. Now Daniel gets to play every event.
Well, scores tell the deal. He would have shot those scores probably, but, you know, I've had so many veteran coaches tell me, you know, you're crazy if you don't put your best team out there.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And, oh, I just don't want anybody to think a certain thing. No, it's your job as a coach to put your best five players out there. You were a young coach, so you really probably didn't know that if your brother was one of the best five players, he should be playing.
Right.
So you learned a good lesson right there.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, good. Well, you know, I also think success leaves clues. I've heard that kind of phrase for many, many years, but I believe it completely. I think everywhere you've been, South Mountain, Little Rock, and now UNM, you've been good. So I know that you must do something right. You must do something well. What do you think are the requisite qualities to be a successful coach? Not necessarily Jake Harrington, but just in general to be a great coach.
I think to be a great coach, you have to adapt every year. Every team is different. Even if you have an 11-man team and 9 or 10 guys are the exact same, every time you bring somebody new in, it changes the dynamic of your team. And every time that these kids grow and become men and get better and see life a little differently and have life experiences, they change. And your job is to make sure that they get to the same point, but not necessarily tell them the exact same thing to get there. And I think that is one of the things that I've always been somebody who sits back and watches. And I love people watching. And I think that's one of the reasons I've been successful is because I have the ability to adapt each team to something different, to push a different button, to get them to the same spot, and to get them more past where they believe they can go to where I believe they can go, but have a different way to do it. And, you know, some people call it being a player's coach. I think there is some of that to it, to where you give them some accountability. But at the end of the day, you are the coach. You make the decisions. But I think you have a good balance of that that helps you get there. But being able to adapt year to year.
I like that a lot. You know, you mentioned earlier you're 6'5", 6'6", you're a big man. Are you a gentle giant?
I am.
Yeah. See, I've always thought that about you, but I always wondered, is there this other side of him that's...
There is.
Okay, all right. But you seem like a gentle giant.
Well, I had a really hot temper when I was young, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's why I'm monotone the way I am. That's why I carry myself the way I do.
I see that, no doubt.
Because I've taught myself how to make sure I don't have that mean side of me come out. I remember... like I said, 3 sisters, 2 brothers. I hit my sister in the face when I was 13 years old, and I still remember her reaction. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I knew I had that fire in mm-hmm. me, but I had to control it. And so the guys know if they've fired me up to where I'm sitting the guys down talking about something, they've done something really wrong. But they also know, and I think one of the reasons that I'm successful is they know that I'm not going to shred them after a bad round of golf because they already know they played bad. The only time I'll shred you is if you quit. If you quit or do something like that, or you act a fool, if you embarrass yourself, your family, or the team, or you quit, are the only times you're going to really fire me up. Mm-hmm. But besides that, it's like, okay, what did we learn? How do we get better? And that side of it is where it's like, oh, crap. Like, I look like I'm a really mean, intimidating person, but I am that gentle giant, that teddy bear that, you know, gets a lot out of the guys.
That's good. I love the fact you said you don't penalized or get upset about bad golf. I mean, you're coaching for a living for a reason. Mm-hmm. You weren't a good enough golfer, and I'm the same way. And we were good golfers, but we weren't good enough to play for a living. So you've got to be able to do that. What would you tell your rookie coach self 15 years ago that you think would have helped avert some of these issues or maybe make some less mistakes? What would you have told yourself that rookie year?
Breathe. It's going to be all right. And if you do everything in your power to be elite and you do it the right way, good things will happen. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do. I mean, I remember my first couple of years I chewed sunflower seeds because I didn't want my players to see me shake my head. Mm-hmm. And that was just me. Okay, Jake, as a player, what'd you hate? Well, I hated looking over and seeing my coach all upset and mad, which drove me crazy. And I played worse golf because I knew I'd upset him or disappointed him. And so my first couple of years was sunflower seeds. I don't do that anymore because I've found ways to do it myself. But it's just, you know, breathe. But also one of the things that I think pushed me and what I loved was I always try to get clues out of T.L. Brown because he was an elite coach. He was a great junior college coach, great D2 coach. He was a great D1 coach. Mm-hmm. And he never gave me a whole lot. And because he wanted me to figure it out on my own. And I remember him telling me one time, you know, Jake, just don't focus on the top 300 or 400 players in the world. And that fired me up. And I'm like, Coach, I'm getting top 400 players in the world. He's like, Jake, you're at a junior college, do this. And I still remember getting a player ranked 72nd in the world at a junior college. And he was like, okay, I know what not to say to you now. But it's just like push the envelope and see how far you can go. Don't let somebody tell you what your boundaries are. You figure out your boundaries. Then if you have your boundaries, try to break those down. And I think doing that as a coach, I put my head down. But what I would say besides breathe is enjoy it. There are so many times that it's funny because I had so much success at the junior college level and I didn't enjoy it all because I was too focused on, you lose half your team every year at the junior college level. And I was so focused on the next. And I never enjoyed it until my last year. I remember my dad, when we won our we went back to back, we won by 34 shots. He goes, you're enjoying this one, aren't you? And I said, I am. He goes, why is that? And I said, because I allowed myself this week to just look at the trees and listen to the birds and breathe and be around my guys and enjoy it. And that's something I'm constantly telling myself even to this day, is because I'll get intense in a conversation with my players and I have to learn to smile. Mm-hmm. And I have to learn to be like, okay, well, how am I going to make them better? If I'm so intense and we're not having any fun, they're not having any fun, we're not getting better. And I constantly make sure I tell myself, enjoy the process, because we are blessed with, this is the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure of that. There's nothing better for me besides being called a husband or a father than being called coach. And so enjoy the process and just enjoy these young men, because you only have them for 4 years if you're lucky.
You know, where were you when I was struggling at Oklahoma State, when I was drowning in expectations? I needed somebody to tell me that. And, you know, players would occasionally tell me that. I'll never forget Pablo Martin, the year we had the number one ranked team in the country, and we would end up winning the national championship. But he said, Coach, you need to relax a little bit. You're out of control here. He was just with stress. And it was
he was right, too, probably.
He was totally right. And I made a conscious effort the rest of that season, which included the Maxwell Tournament in Ardmore, Oklahoma, and then conference regionals and nationals. I made an absolute total effort to just be relaxed and at ease, because I knew I had a good team. I just needed to let them go play golf. And I think probably all of us are susceptible to that at some point. So good advice. Breathe. Enjoy it. But at South Mountain, you created a dynasty, and you won. And that's when I met you. You were at South Mountain. We met at the coaches convention in Las Vegas. And I remember thinking, man, that guy's pretty impressive. He's won some tournaments. Had no idea that we'd be sitting here today. You know, who knows where life's going to go. But you won 3 national championships. Dave Williams Award a couple times, was the National Coach of the Year. Any one memory stand out at the national championship that you won when you were at South Mountain?
Well, obviously, 2010, when we won the first one, that's always the big one. That's the monkey off the back, you know. But more so is, I played at South Mountain Community College. I screwed up the national championship at Palm Valley.
You did?
As a player.
Okay.
We were the number one or two team ranked in the country going in there, and we finished 5th. And I played horrible. They had this activity beforehand at Rockin' Our Ranch where you can climb a rock wall, and we all did it and had fun. I didn't feel anything. I'm like, oh, if I feel something, I'll jump off. I couldn't squeeze my hand because of what I'd done on the rock wall. I never felt it, but something to that. But I had messed it up for my team, and that's, I didn't realize how much of that I carried with that until in 2010, fast forward, won the national championship there. And I didn't realize how much weight I had carried on myself for what I'd done to my teammates. And obviously I didn't, there's a whole lot that goes into it, but winning there in 2010 was something special here in Arizona. And also on top of that, in 2008, my first year coaching, we missed out at our regionals for us to go to nationals as one of the top five teams. And so 2007, 2008, I thought I was gonna get fired coming home. I didn't know, because, I mean, in my eyes, I was a failure. Just because I've always...
Yeah, hard to believe. I mean, you still had a great season.
Right, still had a great season, still in the top five. Mm-hmm. And I went to Palm Valley, where the national championship was held, because I wanted to feel that nastiness in my gut, that I was a sour taste that I would never get rid of, mm-hmm. and I still haven't got rid of it to this day. And I wanted that feeling to be able to drive me for the rest of my life mm-hmm. and drive me in coaching. And that was where we ended up winning a couple years later in 2010 by 10 shots. And that was just full circle moment for me being able to win there after torturing myself a couple years earlier. The fact that, you know, to do that, and it was special.
I've always, all the greatest players, greatest athletes in any sport have always said they hate losing a whole lot more than they love winning. Yeah. And I think that's where you were right there. You wanted to make sure you felt, I don't want this feeling again anyway. Right. I'll figure out a way not to let right. this happen. And you've had some disappointments since then.
Absolutely.
But that's a really good perspective. So you went from South Mountain to Little Rock. Mm-hmm. That's a step up.
Absolutely.
You've moved to a Division I team. But that was a Division I team that wasn't very good. They right. were ranked outside the top 200 when you got there. I think your ranking at some point got to 43rd in the country.
Yeah, we got to 22 during the COVID year.
During the COVID year,
yeah. And finished at 43.
That COVID year, a lot of teams,
yes.
we were ranked fifth when the COVID year, I know what you're talking yeah. about there. So what do you think you've been able to do at Little Rock to get that success, to get it relatively quickly? And I mean, you won a couple of conference championships there. You made the national championship for the first time maybe ever for Little Rock.
Yeah, first time ever.
What led to that success? Was it some of the same things you were doing at South Mountain or what?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Actually, the first couple of years I struggled. You know, you have the little red button that, Staples or something has it. You push it, you yep. can change yep. yourself. That first year, I remember if I could have hit that button and gone back to South Mountain, I would have hit that. I would have broke that button. I hit it so many times.
Wow.
I probably was depressed that first year because I went from having the number one team in the country 5 years in a row, winning, I think at the time I'd won 45 times in the first 5 years of coaching, the first 6 years of coaching, three national championships by 75 shots. And I go to a team that was just very talented, but disoriented, and they weren't playing for anything. There was no passion or culture or anything. I was the third coach in 3 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
some of those kids, you were the third coach.
I was their third coach. Yeah. And I almost left them after 1 year because that's when Alabama opened up, and I had a chance to go work for Coach Sewell possibly. Mm-hmm. But I was like, Jake, I'm not going to do that to these kids. I'm not going to let them have four in 4 years. And I stayed there, stuck it out, and my first two to three years, I tried to be somebody different. And I said, oh, I'm a D1 coach now. I got to do it this way. I got to do this. And about 3 years later, I had one of my players. He says, Coach, can you tell me something? I said, yeah. He goes, why were you so dominant at junior college level? He goes, nobody touched you guys. He goes, you won all this. You did all it. What did you guys do? And I took that to heart. And I said, you know what? I don't need to change. I just need to do the same thing and recruit better players. Mm-hmm. And it was building a culture with those guys at Little Rock that they had never had, and showing them that, okay, 5 days a week is good, but if you don't practice on the weekend, we're going to go right back to where we were Monday every Monday and have no progress. And it was getting those guys in that wanted to practice on their own, do their own thing, and me drive them the same way I drove my junior college teams. And we did that, and we started building this culture of guys were having fun. They loved being there. We're doing different things. We're qualifying all the time. I'm a firm believer in it, and just, you know, everything you, competition just breeds excellence, and you have to compete in everything you do. And that first 3 years, I thought I had to be different. I realized, okay, Jake, you don't. And going in there, getting the right guys, and just really working my butt off recruiting-wise. I mean, at Little Rock, we had virtually no budget. Mm-hmm. You know, I had less than $10,000 to recruit, and that's official visits and everything in there. And so it's word of mouth. It's luckily, you know, I coached the U.S. national team over the Toyota Junior World Cup in 13 and had great contacts over in Europe to help me and get some of those guys, which is why I've always had a lot of Germans, because I've connected well with the German national coaches. And but just to get those guys and get them over here and get them believing that we can do something special, those are the, and that's how we built it, and we got some great guys in there. And the golf course in Little Rock are incredible, and I got those guys believing. I got those guys making, when you guys showed up with a Baylor bag, they didn't care who you were. And the guys in Oklahoma State, they didn't care they were from Oklahoma State. They didn't care what bag you carried. They knew they carried a Little Rock bag. And I knew if I can get that chip on their shoulder and drive it the right way, that, you know, we could do anything, because it's golf. Every week is different. Anybody, like you said, this week, it's a load of, anybody can win this week because it's golf. And it's, okay, who shows up and how do you handle yourself when adversity hits?
Well, you bring up a good point, though. You know, you didn't have to be somebody different to have success at a different school, at a different level or whatever. You maybe needed better players, for sure, but the philosophy and the way you coach them and all that stuff would be the same. So that brings me to my next point. You, at New Mexico, you're in three quarters of the way through your first year, a very successful year thus far, but you followed a legend. Glenn Milliken had played at New Mexico. He's part of one of the greatest coaching trees in college golf.
Absolutely.
All through the years, when you look at all of them. He had made match play at the national championship in New Mexico. He had coached a lot of really world-class amateur players. And he left to go to Missouri this summer. And it was a late, late time when you got the job in August.
Yeah.
You following a legend. I did the same thing. I followed a legend at Oklahoma State in Mike Holder. And I remember telling myself, I can't be Mike Holder. I can't. He taught me a million things. There's no question. And Glenn didn't teach you because you weren't. But it was, I had to be myself. I couldn't fake it. I couldn't be Mike Holder.
Right.
So what, you're following that legend. What advice would you give? And how have you handled that? How have you made it your own? And what advice would you give a coach following somebody that's been successful?
Well, I would say, luckily, I'm comfortable enough in my own skin to be myself. And I almost didn't take the job at New Mexico. I'm very fortunate. Glenn's a good friend of mine. You know, it's so funny when I look at why I made the decision, and you get turned down for jobs and you get mad. Why am I not getting this? When's going to be my chance? Well, and rewind back junior college when I started going to the conventions, because thank goodness part of my dad's territory was Las Vegas, because I stayed with my dad. I said, Dad, you got to do business this week in Vegas so I can go to the convention. Well, I met Dwayne Knight at UNLV. Dwayne was one of my first mentors, who legend at New Mexico. Then at Little Rock, after my first year, I started doing golf camps with Coach Fields. Mm-hmm. And I've done those with him for 9-10 years. Legend there at New Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's where he started.
Yep.
And now Glenn. And it's like, okay. And those guys were the guys that said, Jake, be yourself. I will put in a good word. They're going to love you for who you are. Mm-hmm. They could, trust me, I will make sure that they love you for who you are, because you are who you are. And that's how I followed them, was I had great guys saying, Jake, we know how you are. We know what you do. Just go be yourself, and Albuquerque will fall in love with you.
All three guys obviously wanted to see UNM continue success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I said, you know, it's one of the most unusual and lengthy and successful coaching trees in the history of college golf, if you look at it from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
And you put JT Higgins in there, too, who was in there between. And and that's part of what drives me, as I tell Milliken and Coach Fields all the time. I said, you know what, between Dwayne Knight, Coach Fields, JT Higgins, they all left and won a national championship somewhere else.
Okay.
And I said, Coach, I'm going to win one here. And he says, what? I said, Coach, I'm going to win one here. He said, okay.
You know, I talked to John in a podcast on this podcast, and he was talking about hosting the national championship in 1992 at UNM. Uh-huh. And then he got the bid again in 98, but he had already left to go to the University of Texas. Okay. And anyway, he talked fondly about his time at UNM. And Dwayne Knight, such a legend at UNLV, but he had already created his own legend at New Mexico.
Absolutely. So that's why I say to follow those guys is, and they've done it their own way. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, this program at UNM is built on the back of champions. That's both players and coaches. I mean, when you look back at it, we had multiple guys that were Wagger 1, the world number one player, and out in New Mexico? Mm-hmm. Like, come on. Like, how did Spencer Levine and Gavin Green and Charlie Belgian, how did all those guys end up there? And that's because Glenn was a heck of a recruiter and a coach, and still is to this day. And, you know, I'm just...
He'll be hugely successful at Missouri.
Absolutely,
he's going to be great there for sure. So you mentioned mentors. You mentioned three there, but... Just come up with, and I ask this question to just about every coach, what's the best piece of advice you ever received from another coach? You know, we're competing against each other, or you're competing, and sometimes you're not competing against a mentor that might be giving you advice, but what can you remember, a piece of advice you're going, glad I remembered that?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was actually you.
Okay.
And I remember I had just got crushed in a recruiting I had a recruit that was what I believe stole out from underneath me by a friend.
I remember this conversation.
I go down to Texas and I'm recruiting, and I didn't really want to be there, but I knew I had to be there. And I was, and you could see it all over my face. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely crushed because I just had my soul ripped out, thinking that, you know what, in coaching, there's a lot of competition for recruits and all of this, and you think you have somebody that's close, and all of a sudden they're not, and they take a guy, and I was crushed, and you had wrapped your arms around me and said, Jake, you're going to be fine. You just keep doing what you're doing, and it'll all work out. And I always remember that conversation, because even when the day is bad, or it's a bad recruiting, or you get told no, which we get told no way more than we get told mm-hmm. yes, is to keep my head up and to keep going, and that I'll find my way. And I always remember that.
I think I appreciate you saying that, because I really remember that conversation very well. You were distraught. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't look like you wanted to be there that day. And I remember thinking to myself, I think that's pretty good advice, because if you just keep doing it the right way, you didn't get this kid, mm-hmm. this particular kid, because the guy took him from you, stole him out from underneath right. you, however it worked out. Yeah. But if you keep doing the right thing, you're going to get the right kids for the right reason.
Yeah.
And I think I told you that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the way I felt when I left after talking to you, where I felt like I can finally breathe again, because I was making myself sick because of just how it was eating me alive. And after that conversation, I could actually breathe and start that
healing process. Did you get another good player that
same? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We got some more good ones.
Okay. Speaking of recruiting, what's your basic recruiting philosophy? Has it changed from South Mountain to Division I, and has it changed since NIL and transfer portal? I mean, in general, how you recruit?
No, I mean, it really hasn't. It hasn't changed a whole lot. Basically, I want elite players. My thing when I go recruiting, and what I tell even a lot of juniors, is in today's world, we can see what you shoot on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to go see you in person to see that. Is I'm going to go. I want to see how you take care of mom and dad, how you talk to mom and dad, because that's a reflection of how you're going to talk to me.
Well, it's not going to be any better.
It's not. No, it's not going to be better to me than you do mom and dad. They brought you into the world. So I want to go see that. I want to see how you respect and handle your opponents and how they respect you. I want to see how you carry yourself in adversity. Those are the things that I love. And wherever I'm at, I'm always going to get the best of the best. That's where I'm always going to go. But those are the intangibles that you must have if you're going to come play for me and my program.
So that doesn't change at South Mountain or Little Rock or New Mexico?
Absolutely not.
The player might have changed a little bit.
The player might change. They may have a better ability, mm-hmm. but you better have those intangibles, because my thing that I drive home to my teams all the time is you will be elite. And that you will be elite in life. And that's on the golf course, in the classroom, and in life, you will be elite. And if you're not, then you're letting yourself down.
How old are you?
43.
Okay, so you're 21 years younger than I am. So when you're my age, you're really going to live by that philosophy, because mm-hmm. when you get to be this age, you've had enough of the garbage, the things that if you had done a better job in recruiting, mm-hmm. you would not have invited this thing, this situation, this right. quality onto your team. So I think if you just keep true to that, you'll end up getting the right kids. You'll attract the right kids.
Right.
I think that's important. So I'm glad to hear that you feel like it's more about the person. You just recruited a little bit better athlete
right.
at New Mexico than you did at South Mountain, but you're definitely the person.
Well, and it's culture, honestly, too, coaches. You know, back when we first met, I believe we met when we were getting cancer screening at the mm-hmm. GCA.
We were.
Well, my very first year of coaching, I had the biggest scare of my life is I had cancer. I got that phone call on the golf course. I had melanoma, and I had a big chunk up taken out of my arm. And I always equate that to when I look at teams and I would bring guys in, and why I'm so particular about bringing people in is because if you don't catch cancer at the right time, the cancer will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing on your teams. If you have a cancer that comes in and just starts eating away at your team, eventually you're going to lose your entire team unless you can get rid of that cancer really quick. And the best way not to have the cancer is never to invite it in.
Exactly.
And so that is the biggest key to coaching is you may see, so you have two kids, and it's like, okay, which kid, chemistry-wise, does all the right things, all this, that, and the other, that is the kid you go after. And it's because that culture is so precious wherever you're at, is if you get those guys going in the right direction, is that is when you can be scary good. And we talk about it all the time on our teams, is if you're accountable to me and Sam, we can be a really good team. But if you're accountable to each other, then we can be elite. Because you guys see each other when I don't see you, and you guys got to push each other in a different way than what I can push you, because you live together. And so how do we do that? We're accountable to each other. And if we can get a group of 9, 10, 11 guys that way, you could be scared.
Yeah, and that culture you're talking about developing, you don't have to be there physically for that culture to exist. In fact, if that's the only reason it exists, it's not really a culture.
No. If you do it the right way, yeah. it's actually better when you're not there.
When you're not there, absolutely. The guys are pushing each yep. other, which is great. Great advice right there. Okay. Pretty direct question here, and probably controversial. I've asked this. Some coaches don't want to answer this. You're commissioner of college golf tomorrow. You're making the decisions. What are you going to change?
Right now I'm changing the way we do. We've gone away from how we're in such a great spot with college golf. And we're there because I believe you've been our supporters, our boosters, our families, or everybody's been able to follow us by pulling up at the time, GolfStat.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that this year. We're in shambles. We need to get that back or we're going to lose what we have in college golf. I don't care if it's GolfStat or not, but there's got to be some sort of piece involved where it's like, okay, here's all the records we have. Here's everything we have. This is where you go to look up everybody. And it's frustrating for me as a coach, and I'm in the industry, to be able to not see what you're doing. How many times did we pull up GolfStat or whatever it was to say, okay, what is everybody else in the country doing? You know, you pull it up like, man, that was a great week by Baylor this week. Oh, man, that was awesome by Little Rock. Oh, that was awesome by all your buddies. And then you send them a little message, be like, boom, that was awesome. I would change immediately. We have to have one place we go for live scoring so that way the fans can love on everybody. You can see what you do. You follow your teams. You can get that right. I would make sure that we have one place that we can go so that way we can get back to just competing against everybody. But also that is, this is such a brotherhood of coaches that we support each other. We've had coaches that have had life happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as coaches, we get there for them right away. And I feel like we lose some of that right now because we don't even know who's playing what week and where they're at. Because unless you go to their website, you can't go to one website now like we used to for the last however many years it was, and follow all of college golf at every single level. And I would change that right away, because if we don't do that, we're going to lose those passionate fans that maybe used to have somebody in college golf. Now they don't. They just love following. They know they can go to this spot to watch it. We've lost that, and we need to get that back now.
I think a lot of coaches agree with you. It's been a rough 8 or 9 months.
It has.
For sure. Been rough. Okay, got one more question to ask you. But before I do that, I want to say thanks for joining me. We've been here about 45 minutes, which is about perfect. You've given great answers. I'm really excited to continue to watch your career grow. You know, you're a little behind me. You're 21 years younger, but you've got a lot of highway out there in front of you, and you're doing a great job. And I just think it's great for college golf.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. All right. Last question. Who's your pick at Augusta this week?
Man, it's hard to pick against Scottie Scheffler, isn't it? I mean, you have to. And here's why I picked Scotty. Okay. Yes, I was lucky enough to coach Scotty for a week at the Toyota Junior World
mm-hmm,
Cup.
Mm-hmm.
One of the nicest kids I've ever met.
Fantastic, isn't he?
But this week when I was watching some live at the Masters, is they're going through and seeing what everybody's working on. Everybody's working on something, right? They're all going through and tinkering with something, doing something. And one of the announcers has said something about where they talked to Scotty or a swing coach and said, "What are you guys working on?" And they said, "Nothing."
Hmm.
No, you have to be working on something. No, mm-hmm. Nothing. And Scotty, to when I coached him for a week at 17 to where he is now, he does the exact same stuff with his grip. The fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
He puts his hand on, I want to make sure his hand is on the club the right way. And that is all he's thinking about this week. From everything I've seen, you haven't seen him tinkering with anything out of the norm. It is, he puts his hand on, that's all he cares about right now. He's not working on anything. And there is something about that when you go to a tournament and you're not working on, oh, is my putter doing this or is my swing doing this? He just wants to go play golf. And
I think that might be the genius of Randy Smith. Randy has worked with Scotty since he was a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect Randy a lot. He teaches at Royal Oaks in Dallas. And he's allowed Scotty to be his own person. The way he plays the game is his own way. And I think that's great. But anyway, that's not a surprising pick.
No, not a surprising pick at all.
But I think a good pick. All right. Well, listen, thanks so much, Jake, for joining me. I really appreciate that. And let's have a great week here at Papago.
Absolutely. I appreciate you.
Perfect.